Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
Oh, this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, a new one just begun.
Hey, Two Seekers, Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight. This is the Moody Blues. Listen up. You can sing along if you like.
Let's hope it's a good one. Without any fear. So this is Christmas. The weak and the strong. The rich and the poor ones. The road is so long. So happy Christmas, for black and for white, the yellow and red ones, that stop all the fight. A very Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year.
Sing it! Thanks to Billy Shears, who sent that to us right before airtime. Thanks, Billy. Appreciate it. Moody Blues doing John Lennon's Happy Christmas, War is Over. Remember when that first came out? Long, long, long time ago. On the program tonight, we only have one soundbite. It is 2 minutes and 7 seconds long. It is President Chucklenuts in his radio or audio interview, not radio, audio interview with the Washington Post reporters today. And the rest of the evening will be you and me with as little interruption as humanly possible, other than the wonderful commercial sponsors who make all this possible. What, I'm already getting snotty emails about my singing? So let me ask you, if Bush claims he always listens to the generals when it comes to formulating his plans for Iraq, you know, the men with boots on the ground, as he says, is he going to follow their advice now on his new way forward in Iraq? The Joint Chiefs have come out strongly against any kind of surge in Iraq, unless there is a clearly defined military mission, which in this case there is not, there never has been, and there couldn't be, unless our goal is to make Iraq the 51st state. So do you think Bush will listen to them or to the insane voices in his head? Yeah, I know. And what's up with Dick Cheney and the dead deer on his lawn? Have you heard about this? Did he shoot it? Did he strangle it? Is it his idea of a grisly Christmas decoration? Why hasn't it been removed? It's lying out there. 3 days now. Maybe it's the Washington, D.C. Department of Sanitation who says, screw you, Dick, or something like that. We have some strange stories tonight. Let us begin. This is from the Wayne Madsden report. We mentioned last night about Paraguay and the Bush crime family, or the Bush nuclear family, buying land there. Apparently, the Paraguayan sources have confirmed that the Bush family recently bought 100,000 acres of land in Paraguay's northern Chaco region. The land sits atop huge natural gas reserves, according to sources in Asunción. Moreover, the land deal was consummated in a dinner meeting between Bush's daughter Jenna and Paraguayan President Nicanor Duarte. Although Jenna, who was in Paraguay under the cover of a 10-day UNICEF trip to visit child welfare projects, she put the Bush family seal of approval on the land deal. The actual legal papers were worked out by Bush family lawyers and business representatives. Jenna Bush is supposedly working for UNICEF in Panama City. Now, a troubling aspect of the land deal is the role played by James Kaysen, the U.S. ambassador to Paraguay, in a private Bush family business venture. Kaysen is a career Foreign Service officer whose previous assignment was the head of U.S. interest section Havana, where he managed to stir up tensions between the Habana special interest section and Cuban authorities. With his anti-Castro advertisements placed in the windows of the U.S. offices, Kaysen also has a long history of cooperating with the Defense Intelligence Agency in such locations as Honduras, El Salvador, Panama, Uruguay, and Venezuela. Jenna Bush now acts as her dad's emissary in Latin America, consummating a land deal in Paraguay. Oh, and the Bush land is close to a new U.S. military installation, the Mariscal Estigarribia Air Base. It also sits near a huge tract of land purchased by Reverend Sun Myung Moon, the guy who says he's really Jesus. And the whole thing sits astride Latin America's largest water aquifer, the Guarani Aquifer. So there you have it. Thanks to Wayne Madsden report. Yeah, we never talk about the Reverend Sun Myung Moon and his horrendous influence on not just Bush, but the entire Republican Party. This is the guy who is who claims to be Jesus, the latest incarnation of Jesus. I'm going to be ill. We started the program so nicely. Wasn't that pretty? Was that Justin Hayward? Justin Hayward is older than I am, for God's sake. It couldn't have been Justin Hayward, but it is the Moody Blues. Was that Justin Hayward singing that?
Are you talking to me?
Never mind. Poor Kathy. Kathy's been sick for 2 weeks. She can't get rid of it. It's a head cold. And it's just, it's awful. I had it for about a week, and it went away. Of course, I'm very healthy. Usually Kathy is, too. I feel sorry for you, honey. Y'all should see her right now. Oh, my God. Such a hangdog look. Oh. But Christmas is coming. Huh?
What?
Never mind. I'll go get you another Theraflu in the next break. Or one of those Airbornes. Those are great, man. Has anybody out there heard of Airborne? Or Walgreens sells a brand called Walborne. I think it's Walborne. Not Walmart. Walborne. Airborne. It's a huge dose of C and zinc and some amino acids. And, whew, man, those things are great. No caffeine. It's all natural stuff. Regarding the talk last night on my part of building a private corporate-owned army, which seems to be where we're headed in this country eventually, Prairie 2 writes, Mike, building a corporate army would be difficult and expensive. It is more likely that they, the Bush crime family, have some goal in mind that having no viable army would suit better. Remember what you just said about using nukes to enforce the will of the Bush crime family? If there is no other option because the army is broken and a real or imagined threat emerges, the solution is air power. The Air Force is becoming dominated by the right-wing Christo-fascist types who would not hesitate to commit mass murder. Yeah, that's right. You know, I've said it before. There's no reason for a standing army at all. The only use we put armies to now and have for probably six decades is to enforce our will or try to destabilize theirs, or to act in some sort of weird dance of death, some pas de deux with the Soviets, who no longer exist. So having a standing army populated by people and ships and airplanes is kind of insane, isn't it? Once the atom was split and we now can sit back on Turtle Island and say to the rest of the world, if you attack us or our interests, we will kill your entire country, end of story. And of course, every other country should have nukes, and they could say the same thing. So imagine what a blissful, wonderful planet would be if we all had nukes, and they're all just pointed every which way. And the first one that felt froggy, the other 5 or 6 or 20 or 30 nuclear powers would just ice them. Just, pew, it's it. It's all over. Of course, the problem would be the radiation and the nuclear dust and the nuclear winter. And I know, you just can't escape. Maybe what should happen is first get rid of the armies and the navies and the Air Force and the Marine Corps, and then work on those damn nuclear bombs, huh? What do you think? You got any Christmas carols tonight, Mystic Woman? You do? All right. All right, stick around. We have Do What to the Bible? Greg in Des Moines, Iowa sent me an email here. Do What to? Oh, my God. We'll share this all with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
That these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
Cacophonous. Digs grooves into your brain. Somehow that sort of Christmas carol is appropriate, isn't it? Nothing like a quick ending, too. This is from Greg in Des Moines, Iowa, regarding a brief reading. I was quoting from somebody's email or somebody's message to right-wing Christians, and at the end there was a biblical quotation from Luke. And I read it. Greg heard it in Des Moines, Iowa, and writes to Mike, I beg that you quit quoting from the Bible. Blank the Bible. It contains a few good points, many bad and most conflicting. You just read passages about turning the other cheek and giving away your tunic. You know that many people and nations have passed into history because they didn't understand the foreigners who came to steal their land, outlaw their religion, outlaw their language, and convert their culture. If those indigenous people had known what was on the new immigrants' minds, I'm sure that force would be preferable to offering the other cheek to the invader. Well, yes, there is that there is that argument. But what you're referring to, Greg, is the perverted Christianity. You're not. I don't think you're talking about the message of the man Jesus. I think you're talking about how perverted and sick and degenerate Christianity as a religion. Has become over the past just shy of 2,000 years. And history has demonstrated how sick it really is. So if you're talking about how sick it's become, yes, I agree with you, Greg. If you're talking about the message of Jesus, that kind of still stands with a lot of people. From Kate, who's out there in the desert of Arizona, She says, listening all day to progressive blah, 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 shouting in my head here just before your show. Help me understand why no one is talking about why we can't get out of Iraq. Isn't it true that the Saudis told Big Dick in November not to pull out or, quote, we will fund the Sunnis and withhold oil from the market, end quote? Aren't we being held hostage? How hard is that to say? Kate goes on, and going back to the PNAC papers, we are in Afghanistan because we want the oil out of the Caspian Sea countries. How hard is that to understand? Why are we talking about who's going to be running in 2008? How many troops we should purge or surge? Why don't we hear about our babies coming home in coffins shipped on civilian cargo flights like so much broken equipment? In the meantime, I guess I'm grateful that I have enough Social Security disability money left at the end of the month to send food packages to the 4th Detachment Marines in Ramadi. I cry as I tape up the box, hoping that it is not the last supper for one of those kids. I am so tired. Happy solstice, fellow atheist. May the mother bless you, Kathy and Molly. Kate on the desert. Thanks, Kate. Know what you mean, kid. Speaking of the military, I just saw this story. Apparently, this is kind of old. It's in Sunday's Arizona Daily Star about the Tucson, Arizona, military recruiters had a cocaine ring going. Two military recruiting stations sit side by side, one run by the Army, the other by the Marines. Between them, a total of 7 recruiters were on the take, secretly accepting bribes to transport cocaine, even as most spent their days visiting local high schools. Jesus God. They had help from several more recruiters at an Army National Guard office where one recruiter was said to be selling cocaine from the trunk of his recruiting vehicle. Together, these dozen or so recruiters formed the nucleus of one of the FBI's biggest public corruption cases, the sting known as Operation Lively Green, which unfolded in southern Arizona over a 2-year period and made public last year. Many of the drug-running recruiters remained on the job and continued access to local schools for months, and often years, after FBI agents secretly filmed them counting cash next to stacks of cocaine bricks. The Arizona Daily Star found in a months-long probe of court records and military employment data. Some were still recruiting 3 years after they were first caught on camera running drugs in uniform. Most have pleaded guilty and are to be sentenced in March. Some of them were honorably retired from the military. Oh, my God.
The man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. So this operation, what's it called, Lively Green in southern Arizona, all these military recruiters involved in drug running. I know, it's just a couple of bad apples. Now, the article in the Arizona Daily Star on Sunday went on to say what these thugs did between FBI drug runs isn't known because they weren't under constant surveillance, the FBI said. For example, in the middle of the cocaine sting, one of the recruiters was arrested by another law enforcement agency in an unrelated drug case, accused of transporting nearly 200 pounds of marijuana on Interstate 19. Military recruiting officials say the corruption was not widespread. Oh, well, Jesus, that's good to know. Some Tucson parents and school officials contacted by the Star about the results of the paper's research said students should not have been left exposed for so long to recruiters known by the FBI to be involved in cocaine running. Well, I would hope to shout! And according to the Arizona Daily Star, this isn't the first time the FBI has come under criticism in the Lively Green case. Allegations of sexual misconduct by undercover informants, oh God, also have dogged the case and could result in reduced punishment for the recruiters and dozens of other defendants. Because the undercover informants were getting it on with some, oh my God. At a press conference to unveil the case last year, the FBI announced that many Lively Green defendants were military members. Agents at the time didn't say that recruiters were involved. A Phoenix-based FBI spokeswoman said the agency can't say much at this point about the Lively Green probe because it's still in progress. Yeah, well, let's outsource the military, right? This is from MSNBC. A 13-foot boa constrictor, a pet, wrapped its... This is in Cincinnati. I'd expect to get something like this from the North Georgia Mountains, but... Cincinnati, a 13-foot boa constrictor wrapped itself around its owner's neck and killed the man in his home, authorities said. An acquaintance found Ted Dries, who was 48, inside the snake's cage Saturday and called police. The snake was still strangling Dries when deputies arrived. I'm sorry, I think it's funny as hell. And the officers had to work with members of an animal protection group to remove the reptile. A spokesman for the Cincinnati Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals said people who keep these type of animals as pets should know exactly what they're doing and what they're capable of. He said he has seen photographs of reptile owners posing with snakes coiled around their necks. He said, quote, they don't realize they could be a few seconds away from death, end quote. 13-foot-long boa constrictor. Well, that's what they do. It's another example of purging the gene pool. The pictures of this dead deer on Cheney's property, well, his property as vice president of the United States, he lives on the Naval Observatory. Well, he doesn't live on it. He lives in a hole under the mansion provided for him. But there it is. There's Bambi just laying there rotting. Been there for 3 or 4 days now. This was first shown on Wonket.com. These are phone pictures. Wonket.com. Wonket. Why not pick it up? Now, the other night I was talking, somebody called in about the good old days. Did I ever think things would get back to where we were at one point before the Bush crime family took over? And those kinds of questions usually stop me and make me think because, you know, memory is such a distortion to begin with. I was thinking the other day when I was out for a walk about what I was doing 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and am I... You know, just taking a little inventory. Am I happier? More, when I talk about happy, I mean mentally balanced. Am I more mentally balanced now than I was 15, 20 years ago? And all I could tell, you know, when I think back 15, 20 years, has this happened to you? Everything is kind of in a sepia tone. Everything looks just kind of like, you know, there's the beautiful blue sky, sepia-toned blue sky, and the birds are chirping, and everything seems like wonderful and groovy. And then when I come out of that reverie and think, okay, really now, what was going on 15 years ago? And I think, oh, Jesus, what was going on? Well, I was unemployed. I had no health insurance, struggling raising Chris, on my own. Desperate, trying to find work. So I get, you know, I get a little suspicious of myself when I start thinking about the past, about how good it was, right? Anyway, Jeff in Washington writes, Mike, let's stop kidding ourselves right now. The old days are gone and will never return again. Our people and government are run on lies, deception, sensationalism, and glut. People get their news from television, don't realize other things have happened during the past week beyond stranded mountain climbers, celebrity gossip, house fires, and normal weather patterns. The Democrats are no better than the Republicans. They're all what I stepped in and what is stuck to the bottom of my shoe. It's all raced to the top, and the peak is only a cliff. To begin with, we need to start gleaning the so-called media. Not everyone is into blogs, especially when there is a TV remote next to their fat-assed nests. Mark my words, Jeff writes, we will have to hit bottom before the ascent because not enough of us are paying attention or give a damn. If it's out of sight, it's out of mind, and not enough of us are dying, starving, freezing, or experiencing ultimate poverty. When in doubt, we can all go shopping, right? Ooh. Now, I understand the cynicism, Jeff. And then Greg in Des Moines wrote, is it the same Greg? Yeah, I think it's the same Greg. Mike, I often hear people say that we need to get America back to where it was once was, back to the time when... When Asian Americans were interned means to bury, Greg, interned in camps during World War II, when African Americans were repressed and hanged, when strikers were killed, when Native Americans were killed and their land stolen, when capitalists exploited everything and everyone, when the fathers of America owned slaves. No, we don't need to go back to any period in America. We need to take America where it's never been. Yeah, I agree. And the only reason I correct in interred is because I accept corrections, and I think you should, too. That means buried. But anyway, yeah, you're right, Greg. It's just a crappy... The past in this country is not really past. And then Rick in the San Diego area wrote in, Mike, I just hung up with the L.A. Times. This is about Jonah Goldberg, Lucy Ann Goldberg's son, you know, the woman who taped the phone calls between... Monica and who is the one that had the facelift? Linda Tripp, that's right. Mike, I just hung up with LA Times editorial person telling them they are sick for running an editorial today by Jonah Goldberg saying that Augusto Pinochet would have been good right now for Iraq. The LA Times are sick people. They fire Robert Scheer for this fascist, Jonah Goldberg, and run an article saying too bad we don't have Pinochet in Iraq. Is that not the most twisted thing you have heard yet? It is about that for me, Rick writes. I hope you mention it tonight on the show. I would love to hear your reaction. Thanks. Peace and happy holidays. Weird transition, I know, but I mean it. I'll be listening. Yeah, well, sure, it's crazy, Rick. But Jonah Goldberg was an abortion that was unsuccessful. I mean, Lucy Ann Goldberg has said several times that she tried to abort Jonah. I don't mean she tried it several times. She said it several times, and it didn't happen. So forget Jonah Goldberg. Jonah Goldberg is an abortion that didn't happen. And then the last one here, this is from Spitfire, who says, when you next air O Holy Nightmare, the natural policy would be to mention the original artist who sent it to you. On the one hand, you have the possibility of John and Peggy Armstrong sitting by their radios waiting for their names to be mentioned and feeling disappointed to hear you continue to not mention them. Who knows? Maybe a mere mention of their names will prompt them to call in and thank you. Continuing to ignore their contribution to what has become a Mike Mull exclusive might seem like a theft to them. Credit where credit is due is usual policy on these things. Well, Spitfire, I certainly agree, but other than the fact that you knew who originally sent it, I had no idea who sent it to us. I've said many times, I don't know who sent it to us. Spitfire goes on, then again, considering the product of their efforts, a serious question rises as to whether this is a case of giving credit or assigning blame. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy. This is NovaM.
Perfectly comfortable with all that's been done. to a friend.
Sometimes I'm happy, you know, this is...
But wars are not a time of joy. These aren't joyous times.
Yeah, and you're a war president, aren't you, George? Damn, you're like, Roosevelt and, who was that other president? Churchill!
From Nanette, hi Mike. This past year in Northern California, I believe it was Ukiah, Mendocino County, three or four, perhaps more, Army recruiters were convicted on rape charges. They regularly held parties at their headquarters and gave drugs to girls who had come by looking into joining the Army and then raped them. Man. This was in the news yesterday. And I can remember writing this article in 1979 for Atlanta Magazine. So there you go. And the title, this is from the LA Times, Pot is called the biggest cash crop in America. And, you know, I don't know why this is always news. Back in 1979 when I wrote the article. I start out by saying it was the biggest cash crop in Georgia, which it still is. Georgia! And that as far as the entire country is concerned, of course it was the biggest cash crop. Untaxed, unregulated. There was an effort in Kentucky by a guy named Gatewood Galbraith, who went on to be, he ran for governor or he was in the Kentucky legislature. But he had something way back, I'm talking a million years ago, called the Kentucky Marijuana Feasibility Study. And this is a scientific paper written by agronomists and people who understood, and economists, who understood that if the state of Mississippi, state of Kentucky, which at the time was, I don't know what the economic conditions are in Kentucky now, I really don't, but back in the late 70s, early 80s, it was just a rat's nest. It was just horrible. Their major cash crop was the death crop of tobacco. They were exporting death and sickness and cancer all over the country and all over the world. The little truck farms that were around that grew potatoes and corn and beets and asparagus, whatever, you know, you can't make a living. The big consolidation of farms was going on at that point. And Galbraith came up with the idea that if the Kentucky farmers who had tobacco allotments, and most of these farms would have 2, 3, 4, 5 acre allotments where they would make, at the time it was roughly, after all expenses, probably $5,000 an acre is what they would clear. And that was a lot of money back in 78. If you had a 3 acre allotment, that means you made $15,000 for the year. And in 78, if you lived in rural Kentucky, that was enough to, get you through the year, maybe buy your kids a new pair of shoes. So the Kentucky Marijuana Feasibility Study simply said that if those allotments were switched from tobacco to marijuana and it was bought by the state of Kentucky, a commission would be set up, kind of like state liquor boards in a lot of states. There are states still where you can only buy liquor in state-controlled liquor stores. And if the marijuana was bought up, regulated, examined agronomically, or whatever the hell the word is, good stuff, and the state taxed it and sold it, then poverty, as it was known in Kentucky, would be eliminated by the end of the second crop. And, of course, nothing happened. So now LA Times is reporting yesterday $35 billion market value of U.S.-grown cannabis. Tops, hay and corn and soybeans and yada, 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 yada. Why is this news? Every 10 years or so, somebody comes up with this, that it's the number one cash crop. And today I was listening to NPR, and I think it was NPR, and they were talking about how in upscale suburban communities now, there will be nice, gorgeous McMansions, but inside the McMansions, nobody lives there. If it's three stories, there would be indoor marijuana factories that are just churning this stuff out, especially in California. Is that what y'all do out there? California ranked as the report's top state for both outdoor and indoor marijuana production. The report estimates that the state had 4.2 million indoor plants. Now, how do they guess that? Valued at nearly $1.5 billion. State of Washington was ranked next with $500 million worth of indoor cannabis plants. Yada, yada, yada. We can sit and giggle and chuckle and laugh at it, but as we're sitting here giggling and chuckling and laughing at it, there are hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands. Think about it for a second. Tens of thousands of more people than live in Ukiah or live in, probably more people than live in Sacramento, who are in federal and state penitentiaries for growing, possessing, selling marijuana. Marijuana. Weed. Whew. Oh, my God. What's our prison population up to now, Kathy? Oh, never mind. Why am I asking Kathy anything? 2 million, I think. I think we have 2 million people incarcerated. And the last stat I saw, if I'm remembering it correctly, as in some states as many as 80% of people are in prison on drug-related crimes. Now, that doesn't just mean marijuana. Methamphetamines, which will really kill you, they're disgusting. Those drugs, I don't know what to do about that. Cocaine, which will kill you. I lost several friends in the 70s and 80s because of cocaine use. The heroin, which will kill you. But reefer, I mean, why lock somebody up because they smoke or grow or sell marijuana? That's, I don't know, it's pretty crazy. Right, as you can tell, we're all over the map. When we come back after the break, I want to toss one more thing into the mix here. I mentioned this on a promo I did for our Phoenix affiliate, KPHX. Did you read any of Kafka's The Trial when you were in high school or college? Do you remember that, The Trial? You know, one morning for no apparent reason, Joseph K. is arrested and is told he's charged with a crime so secret and mysterious that he himself is not allowed to know what it is, and yet he's got to defend himself. That's pertinent to the next story here, and then we're going to take a phone call. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. A new Zogby poll released today. Americans believe in Bethlehem. They back the city of Bethlehem, but they're not sure where it is. It says here, most Americans believe Bethlehem is an Israeli town inhabited by a mixture of Jews and Muslims, according to a pre-Christmas survey of U.S. perceptions of the town. Only 15% of Americans realize that it is a mixed Christian-Muslim-Palestinian town in the occupied West Bank. And it goes on. This is at Zogby.com. Interesting. The trial, I don't know if you all had the same sort of English teacher that I had in high school, but we were required to read metamorphosis and the trial. And if you remember the trial, a guy gets up one morning and he's told that he's been arrested and he's told he's charged with a crime so mysterious and secret that he's not allowed to know what it is. This is what the U.S. government does now. This is what we do to people in detention in Guantanamo. You're charged with terrorism. What did I do? We can't tell you. Can I have a lawyer? No. Can I hear the charges against me? No. Can I see the evidence against me? No. Can I speak out at my trial? No. Well, if you read the trial, you know at the very end, finally a couple of people come to take the main character Joseph K to a cliff or a quarry where he's supposed to commit suicide, and he doesn't, and they execute him. Well, in yesterday's New York Times, and I'm not going to get too far into it because it was a lengthy article, but it was up there in the upper right-hand part of the newspaper, above the fold, in the prestige place where the editors of the Times, that's where they put their top stories, up there in the upper right-hand, above the fold, that's it. Sometimes with a photo or a graphic, sometimes not, but if it's not splashed completely across the entire upper half of the front page, that's usually when people are assassinated or war breaks out. That upper right-hand quadrant of the New York Times is where the story that the editors really, really want you to read that day. The title is Former U.S. Detainee in Iraq Recalls Torment. And let me just share a little bit of this with you, okay? One night in mid-April this year, the steel door clanked shut on detainee number 200343 at Camp Cropper, the United States military's maximum security detention site in Baghdad. American guards arrived at the man's cell periodically over the next several days, shackled his hands and feet, blindfolded him, and took him to a padded room for interrogation, the detainee said. After an hour or two, he was returned to his cell, fatigued but unable to sleep. The fluorescent lights in his cell were never turned off, he said. At most hours, heavy metal or country music blared in the corridor. He said he was roused at random times without explanation, made to stand in his cell. Even lying down, he said, he was kept from covering his face to block out the light, the noise, or the cold. And when he was released after 97 days, he was exhausted, depressed, and scared. Detainee 200343 was among thousands of people who had been held and released by the American military in Iraq, and his account of his ordeal has provided one of the few detailed views of the Pentagon's detention operations since the abuse scandals at Abu Ghraib. Yet in many respects, his case is unusual. The detainee we're talking about here was Donald Vance, a 29-year-old Navy veteran from Chicago who went to Iraq as a security contractor. He wound up as a whistleblower, passing information to the FBI about suspicious activities at the Iraqi security firm where he worked, including what he said was possible illegal weapons trading. But when American soldiers raided the company at his urging, Mr. Vance and another American who worked there were detained as suspects by the military, according to officials and military documents. At Camp Cropper, he took notes on his imprisonment and smuggled them out in a Bible. He wrote on July 3rd, for example, sick, very, vomited. The next day he wrote, no phone calls till I leave. And it goes on and on. If you will read this thing, Vance said even Saddam Hussein had more legal counsel than I ever had. He says he's planning to sue Donald Rumsfeld on grounds that his constitutional rights have been violated. He goes on and on and on. He said, while we were detained, we wrote a letter. He's talking about his cellmate, another American. We wrote a letter to the camp commandant stating that the same democratic ideals we are trying to instill in the fledgling democratic country of Iraq, from simple due process to the Magna Carta, we are absolutely, positively refusing to follow ourselves. And it goes on and on. What is horrifying about this lengthy article in yesterday's Times is the sort of answer that he got and that his attorneys got when asked why this man was being held. And when I read this, I thought, my God, my God, my God, this is not Orwell. This is not 1984. This is Franz Josef Kafka. This is
I've read this. Where did I read this before? The trial! And there it is. What has happened in this country is astonishing. The abrogation of liberty and rights and judicial process and criminal justice, all of it brought about by this degenerate attorney general, this sick, monstrous vice president, this idiotic president, just all of them. The Secretary of State, who is a shoe freak and nothing more. It just goes on and on and on. And yet the incoming Democrats say they're not going to impeach this bastard. Both of these people, the entire cabinet, they're not going to impeach. Why? It's with all due respect to the new Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, and the leader of the Senate, Harry Reid, it's not up to you two. It really isn't. There is a document that really, really, really supersedes anything you have to say, sir, ma'am. It's the U.S. Constitution. It's what happens when crimes are committed by the highest executive officers in the nation. This is insane. If somebody here in Georgia goes out and snatches a four-year-old kid off the street at one of the malls in Atlanta and takes the kid to downtown Atlanta and puts a gun in the kid's face and pulls the trigger and blows the child's head into red mist. And the prosecutor is going to, in Fulton County, is going to say, no, I'm sorry, we're not going to prosecute this because we just don't think it would be good for race relations, because after all, the child was black and the murderer was white. So we're just not going to prosecute this. All right? Are you serious? And yet, isn't this what Pelosi and Reid are saying? What the hell is going on? That's not why I voted Democrat. That's not why I sat on Air America for two solid-ass years putting up with their nonsense, trying to get Democrats elected. And now Reid and Pelosi? And the Democrats I counted on are going to say, well, no, it's off the table. We just, we want to move America forward. This is crazy. This is absolutely crazy. And this is the part where I'd like to say, all right, this is the point where I drop out of the system. Well, if I drop out of the system, then I've got to quit my job. And I can't quit my job because I've been a wastrel enough years of my life that I have to keep working. But what the hell do you do? I mean, if you're a Democrat, I hear a lot of people talking about, hey, yay, yay, all right, we won. It's not a goddamn game. This is serious business. And now I'm going to listen to Reid and Pelosi tell me they're going to let this criminal bastard maintain for another 2 years? And what's he talking about today? More blood and death and slaughter and destruction in Iraq? Oh, my God.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, all the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
The witch hammer, Malleus Maleficarum.
Thanks to Tom for reminding me of this. First published in 1486 is arguably one of the most infamous books ever written. It served as a guidebook for inquisitors during the Inquisition and was designed to aid them in the identification, prosecution, and dispatching of witches. It must be noted that during the Inquisition, few, if any, real verifiable witches were ever discovered or tried. Often the very accusation was enough to see one branded witch tried by the Inquisitor's court and burned alive at the stake. Estimates of the death toll during the Inquisition worldwide range from 600,000 to as high as 9 million. Either is a chilling number when one realizes that nearly all of the accused were women and consisted primarily of outcasts and other suspicious persons, old women, midwives, Jews, poets, gypsies. Anyone who did not fit within the contemporary view of pious Christians were suspect and easily branded witch. Terrorist. Witch. Terrorist. Look up, if you've nothing to do tonight, Malleus Maleficarum, The Witch Hammer. It's been called one of the most bloody books ever written. It doesn't say here, but if I remember, a couple of monks wandered around Northern Europe collecting evidence from these trials where people were accused of witchcraft. And the accusation was the conviction, which is like terrorism is now. The accusation is the conviction. There's no recourse. There's no argument. There's no defense. This is serious stuff, folks. I mean, it really is. And it's being conducted. All of this is being conducted under the administration of a man who belongs in prison. If I don't know what the penalty is when someone is impeached and tried in the Senate and found guilty and removed from office, I don't know if that opens him up to or her up to criminal prosecution once the protection of the executive branch of government has been removed. I don't know. Somebody will probably send me in two sentences. Well, you know, don't send me a link to some huge tome about what happens with impeachment. But Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid say it's not going to happen. That the people operating the witch hammer of the 21st century are just going to be allowed to continue. Now, when you tell me that, well, come on, Malloy, they're not people being burned at the stake. No, they're being burned with white phosphorus. They're being burned with gelled gasoline. They're being burned with bombs and... This is crazy. I mean, it really is. Can you play Justin Hayward again just for a second, please? Can you cue that? When do we break here? Okay, well, go ahead and play it. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls. I'm getting over the limit here. I really am. This is too much overloaded circuitry.
What have you done? Another year over. A new one just begun. And so this is Christmas. I hope you have fun. The near and the dear one, the old and the young. Merry, Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one.
for black and for white, yellow and red ones. Let's stop all the fights. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a
conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Malloy.
26 before the hour. Let's do some phone calls. Let's start with Alex, who's calling in from Scottsdale, Arizona. Alex, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Good evening, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, I don't want to be redundant, but we had this conversation 3 weeks ago just before Thanksgiving. You remember?
Which one is that?
Oh, I was telling you that the client of mine got the son transferred from the Coast Guard over to Baghdad, and then they got blown up, him and his company of medics.
Yes.
Okay, and then I don't know if I told you that, but one of my godsons got sent to Afghanistan last week.
No, that's the first I've heard that.
Okay, anyways, getting back to that point, he got sent over to Afghanistan, and he got the news just about a week before this double down issue came up.
Mm-hmm.
A new buzzword next to surge.
Don't you just want to beat the hell out of somebody when they use that kind of terminology?
Well, it's buzzwords.
Wanted dead or alive, doubled down. What the hell is this? Where do we live?
Oh, well, these are guys that used to do pitch and drink a lot of alcohol and were chicken hawks that never went to war and doesn't know what somebody dying in your arms feels like.
That's true.
You know, Mike, I've watched these kids, Mike, one for 19 years, the other one's for like 22.
Yeah.
And I've watched him grow up, and I've tried to be a leading influence, even though I've been as known as of all the families, the black sheep of the family, because I'm out there taking chances tonight. I'm out knocking doors, and I stopped from knocking a client's door just because, you know, hey, I waited this long just to get this off my chest. And I agree with you wholly. Everything you said, and you get to a point, you just want to explode.
Yeah, really.
You think about 10, 15 years ago when you used to make money and you didn't have these thoughts and misgivings and you didn't think that you're like on the edge of lucidity because the way you're being driven. It's like when you get on the freeway and you can't get out because the traffic's so bad, it's like you're being driven.
Yeah.
And that's what these people are good at doing. They're good at driving people. Whether it's Pelosi or Reed, you know, it's like, you know, how dirty do you get? If your finger's stuck somewhere you're not proud of, then they got you over the barrel.
Well, I hope the Democrats are, and I'm beginning to realize that this is wishful thinking on my part, but I hope the Democratic Party leadership will protect and defend the U.S. Constitution, since this son of a bitch in the White House and his whole crew have done everything they can to destroy it and end it. I hope that Reid and Pelosi and everyone else involved in the Democratic Party leadership will say, okay, look. This is much bigger than Democratic Party politics or whether or not the Christian Coalition is going to wet its pants when we impeach this guy. But the law is the law. If they don't impeach him, if they don't bring charges against him, Alex, then kiss the Republic goodbye. It's over. I mean, we'll still play and pretend and act like we live in a country that is constituted a certain way, but that it'll be gone.
And the thing is the children, I mean, people are being poisoned through the games, and they're more worried about, you know, Matchbox 360 or whatever that new game is, and, you know, playing computer games and being brainwashed that when they grow up, they can go do this too.
Yeah, I know.
I see that in, like, my younger sons, compared to my older sons, you know, I've tried to teach all of them the same thing to distinguish between bullshit and always look for the truth.
Can't say that on the
air. I know, I'm sorry.
All right. I'll tell you what, we'll get back to you. we'll get back to you next time. Now, let me say something that I better clear this up. You know, Kathy says I better clear it up. Last week, I was quoting from John Dean's column that impeachment would detract from the business that the Democrats have to do in order to repair all the damage that these evil people have done in 6 years. The Bush crime family and this sick, degenerate Republican Party. And I thought about it over the weekend, and then I read some other stuff. You know, I go to Michael Lerner. I go to Robert Perry. I go to Noam Chomsky. I go to Bart Kopp. You know, I've just got this whole list of people whose opinions, you know, I factor in. And it occurred to me that I made a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake in saying that John Dean is right. Without impeachment, not only will history judge us as not caring about the Constitution or the future of this country, not only that, but are we not faced with a moral, if not moral, certainly an ethical imperative here? We have watched over the past 6 years, very slowly, incrementally, this Bush crime family destroy everything. Now, the problem here is not everybody has, very few people, as a matter of fact, relatively speaking, out of 300 million of us, very few people have felt the lash. The people on the Mississippi Gulf Coast have felt it. The people in certain Midwestern towns that have seen all of a sudden their town die because jobs are exported. Families who were conned into believing that they were defending liberty or protecting America and now have a folded flag where they used to have a husband or a mother or a sister or a brother, they felt it. But so many of us haven't felt it yet. And I guess that's the inertia. And in the meantime, television and the entertainment industry does what it is commissioned to do. Make us forget. Make us forget. It's like, what's the drug, Kathy, they give you to make you forget when you have Versed? Damnedest thing. I've had four or five oral surgeries, not recently, but people who remember IE America days remember me coming to work and going, oh, God, and you know, the conscious sedation. And I had no idea what it was. And they give you an extra drug called Versed so that when you come out of the conscious sedation, even though you haven't been under general anesthesia, you have no memory. It stops your mind from being able to file stuff away. And that's exactly what television and the entertainment media are doing to us. They're preventing us from filing stuff away. Now, damn it, I don't mean to beat a dead deer, in Cheney's case, or a dead horse, but either we're going to do something, either we're going to insist that the laws of this country be upheld and that the criminals be brought to justice, or we're not. I mean, it's very simple, or we're not. If we do not, if this Bush administration is allowed to escape from the requirements of the United States Constitution, and it is up to the Democratic Party leadership to either enforce the law or turn their backs on it. And if they turn their backs on it, then it is finished. Patriot Acts 1 and 2 that have eroded constitutional rights, illegal wars, the response to Katrina, the CIA leak probe, illegal wiretapping, torture memos, the Downing Street memo, fake intelligence, tens of thousands of innocent lives lost, no, hundreds of thousands. What is an impeachable offense, Ms. Pelosi? What the hell does it take? These are high crimes and misdemeanors of the most sterling quality. What does it take, Senator Reid? What does it take? What would you two have to see happen? What would you two have to see this Bush crime family do in order to say, yes, we're going to impeach him? What would it take? If not this, what? If not this, then the Constitution of the United States is toilet paper. And don't any of the Democratic Party leadership ever, ever get all misty-eyed on Veterans Day or the 4th of July or any of these national holidays, because you will have crapped all over the documents that put this country together. Now either get off your asses and enforce the law, or shut up and leave me and other people in this country alone to figure out how in the hell we're going to survive and pass something on to our children that is worthwhile. Jesus, God. So, if somebody wants to refer to me as a flip-flopper, go right ahead. It's called processing the information. It's called jumping to a conclusion. Yeah, well, the business of America has to go on. We've got so much damage to repair. Uh-huh, okay. We have criminals running this country. Now, do we have time to do this right now? No, we don't. All right. I've got one soundbite tonight. And that's this sick son of a bitch sitting in the Oval Office in an interview with the Washington, three writers for the Washington Post, Peter Baker, Michael Fletcher, and Michael Abramowitz. And it's from today. He is going to send more troops to die and kill into Iraq. Do you understand that? Every single rational person in this country, from the military to the journalists to the academics, have all said to this crazy bastard, no, it's over. Stop it. And he's going to do it anyway. He's never been legally elected. It's way past time he got out of Al Gore's house. Jesus, God, what does it take? Senator Reid, Nancy Pelosi, you don't know me from Adam's house cat, and you couldn't care less. But damn both of you if you don't at least make the effort of removing this criminal from office. Enforce the Constitution. Do what we elected you to do.
When the war is won, a soldier of a misfortune, a soldier of an angry call, soldiers on foreign soil. Well, we're not here to fight your war, 'cause we know what you're fighting for. Oh, oh, this world is not your toy.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, here's the last one with Colin Powell. Schieffer followed up on Paul's comments regarding lack of troops and why Bush's surge is a terrible idea. Schieffer says, well, let me just ask you about that, because do we have the troops? You seem to be suggesting that we don't.
What General Shoemaker said the other day before a committee looking at the Reserve and National Guard, that the active army is about broken. General Shoemaker is absolutely right. And all of my contacts within the Army suggest that the Army has a serious problem in the active force, and it's a problem that will spread into the Guard and Reserves. Backlog of equipment that is not being repaired. Soldiers, especially officers and non-commissioned officers, going on repetitive tours. So if you surge now, you're going to keep troops who have already been kept there long, even longer, and you're going to be bringing in troops from the United States who are going to be coming anyway, but perhaps a little bit later. And so that's how you surge. And that surge cannot be sustained. The current active Army is not large enough, and the Marine Corps is not large enough for the kinds of missions they're being asked to perform. And we need to let both the Army and the Marine Corps grow in size, in my military judgment. And the Congress has a serious task ahead of it to make sure that the Army and the Marine Corps get the funds they need to sustain themselves and to sustain their equipment, their ammunition, everything else they need, if they're going to be put in these kinds of situations.
I take it you think that 160,000 troops are not going to be any more successful than 140,000 have at this point.
Nobody has made the case to me that 100 and it's 140 now, but I have not seen a case that persuades me that it would be better at 150 and 160. And frankly, that would take a surge that you'd have to pay for later by not having troops that can come in and replace some of the 160,000.
That's an astonishing soundbite. It really is. In the first place, let's not kid ourselves. Colin Powell is a paid pet of the military-industrial complex. Colin Powell is a liar. He's either a liar or a total fool for his involvement in getting this nation into war. But he has a history of being an expert at cover-up, going all the way back to Vietnam. Before he was a general, when he was, I believe he was a captain or a colonel or a major. And he successfully covered up the My Lai massacre for 2 or 3 years before a reporter broke the story. Colin Powell is a liar. Colin Powell is dishonest. And Colin Powell is a paid pet or whore, you take your choice of the words there, of the military-industrial complex in this country. And yet, Colin Powell is saying something here, isn't he? The Army has a serious problem in the active force, and it's a problem that was spread into the Guard and Reserves. Backlog of equipment that is not being repaired. Soldiers going on repetitive tours. This is the Bush crime family, folks. This is the Republican Party. They have broken the military! Jesus God! They've broken it. Now, the question, why? Why did they do it? Well, of course. Of course, outsource. Privatization. As Paul says here, the surge cannot be sustained. The current active army is not large enough. The Marine Corps is not large enough for the kinds of missions they're being asked to perform. And a draft, truth seekers, is not going to work. So what's the answer? You got it! You're way ahead of me! Private military! Just like we are privatizing the prison industrial complex in this country, we are privatizing the Food and Drug Administration, we are privatizing every single regulatory agency, now we are privatizing the military. That is the only solution. Does that make sense now, Truth Seeker? Do you get it? A couple of you got it. I'm sure thousands got it. Andre writes, in Powell's war criminal, more combat-ready troops will be private mercenaries, more Bechtel, more Halliburton, sort of like at the end of the Roman Empire, when the Roman army was made up predominantly of foreign mercenaries and conquered peoples. Earl writes, 30,000 combat troops on the ground means 3-plus troops somewhere else to support them. Isn't that 90,000-plus? Do you say draft? Of course you need equipment. Doesn't that mean more funds for the military-industrial complex? You see how the evilness, you know, I talk a lot about evil, and I say bad words on the program. I say son of a bitch. I say goddamn. I say this. I say that. I come across like a real potty mouth. Do you understand my anger? Don't you feel the same way? You're not fixated on those three poor, miserable, lost mountain climbers, are you? God rest their souls. They're all dead. Jesus Christ, every time I turn on television for the past 10 days, mountain climbers, I'm so sorry for them, I really am, but when you tackle Mount Hood, you stare death in the face, and if you die, goodbye, you die doing what you wanted to do. Do you understand what's going on here? Do I get angry? Do I say bad words? Yes! Because of this. Look! What they've done. Look what they've done. They have broken the military. And they've done it consciously and deliberately and with malice aforethought, because the ultimate plan is to privatize it. Do you get it now? Do you understand where we are now? Go back to where we were. My caller from New York, how do we get it back? We don't. Your phone calls after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Seven past the hour. God, I love that music. A little preview from our Christmas show, which will be Thursday night. And then we are off Friday and off Christmas Day Monday. Hope you're going to be here. Our Christmas show consists of a bunch of elements that we put together. And we usually do a live reading of The Night Before Christmas with Molly and me, a tradition that started when my 28-year-old son, when he was about five or six, and I had just started radio and didn't have a babysitter one night, took him into the studio with me, and it was a program right before Christmas, and so we did The Night Before Christmas. And last year we did it with Molly, and the year before she was 6 months old. Last year she was a year and a half, and it was kind of like, like having just a pee machine on your lap while you're reading that before Christmas. But I think she gets it this year. We have been explaining to her the mythology of Santa Claus, that, you know, that mommy and daddy get the presents, but Santa Claus is kind of a fun idea that people used to believe in, this jolly old elf. After they've done enough drugs. Now, we leave that part out. She can find that out for herself. So, I hope you're going to be here Thursday night. All of the music will be Christmas themed. And we also read from the Book of Luke, the famous Christmas story, which I've always found to be very inspirational, very calming. When I read that story, even though, you know, I accept it in the same manner that I accept mythology of other philosophical approaches to life, right? So anyway, do join us Thursday night coming. This Christmas season has just unfolded, hasn't it, Kathy? Kathy doesn't know. She's been sick for 2 weeks now. Poor baby. She's still... I'm looking at her out there in the control booth, and she's just like, oh. Can you open your mic and just say something so people know that, you know, you're there?
What?
Okay, never mind. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at her. We've been married long enough to know that, you know, when I'm sick or when she's sick, usually when we're both sick at the same time, it's hell. But when just one of us, you know, if you have a partner or you're married or whatever, you get by, right? All right, it's 10 past the hour. Let's do some phone calls here. Let's start with Sarge in Mississippi. Hey, Sarge.
Hey, how you doing, Michael?
I'm doing all right. How about you, sir?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. You know, you're talking about the military. I know a little bit about it.
Yeah, you do.
And I just really, really can't believe anybody with just a millimeter of a brain can think that putting more troops in Iraq is even a sensible idea. I mean, it doesn't even make a lick of sense.
No, it doesn't. Baghdad has a population of 6 million, and we're going to send 30,000 more troops there. What the hell is that going to do?
It's nothing. And there is no way that we can possibly man the military with enough people to fulfill our commitments, because let's face it, we are not meeting our commitments today. We have not fulfilled the troop levels that we need. I was in during a time when we were having to cut corners with personnel because there was just not enough troops. It was during Vietnam. You had to shuffle your troops around, and even then, we had a shortage of personnel, even with a draft. You didn't have enough people in the military to cover everything. And we are worse off today than we were back then because these idiots have cut back the troop strength. They have engaged us in two wars. They have engaged us in God knows what else is going on. And then at the same time, they're saying, well, we've got to put more troops. There isn't any more troops. We only have, 20,000 that can be deployed in addition to what's not deployed somewhere now? I believe it's 20,000, I think I heard. But it's almost nothing. It's just virtually, I mean, this is lunacy. We are living in a world of craziness. And then when you have someone like Reid, someone like Pelosi, who are saying, oh, impeachment is off the table. Well, okay, I can understand. There are those Republicans who are not going to vote for impeachment, no matter how guilty this administration is of anything. You think Trent Lott's going to vote for him because of the Katrina screw-up? Oh, no. Lott's going to vote, we can't impeach him, mm-hmm. You know? Even though it's Lott's own constituents that are getting tortured by this SOB. And then he's going to have the audacity to stand there and say, well, we can't impeach him. I don't think it's impeachable. Yeah, I know. That's what's going to happen. Maybe that's what Nancy's talking about. Maybe that's what Harry Reid's talking about. But the people need to get off their butts, get on their telephones, do whatever they need to do. Hit the streets. I don't care. But we need to let these people know if these sorry slimeball traitors are not taken out of office, then somebody's going to pay for it. And it's going to be Pelosi, it's going to be Reid, and it's going to be every one of them that refuses to stand up for this Constitution. It makes me mad. I gave two damn much to this country, and I still give too much to this country to see these SOBs walk away and violate the law, violate the Constitution that I gave my butt for. And I can't stand it, Mike. I can't stand it. How in the hell can they let my fellow citizens here in Mississippi suffer like they're suffering? How can they let my friends in New Orleans and the Louisiana coast suffer like they're suffering and say, impeachment's off the table?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I understand the arguments, Mike. I understand them. But there is no way we can allow these traitors to get away with it. And John McCain, he needs to get his act together. He either needs to announce that he's doesn't care about America, or he needs to stand up and act like a veteran. As far as I'm concerned, he is no veteran. He is just the worst traitor that America has ever had, bar none, because that man knows what torture is. That man knows that we are in something that is bad for our troops. It's bad for our country. There is no business of this country that rates above the Constitution.
I hear you, Sarge.
And I just, I am so angry. And the reason I'm so angry, last night during your show, I was going through all kind of holy hell. I had a knee that just would not do anything, and I heard it among other things in my service career. And that thing flares up from time to time, and it's just like someone's got you in a vice, and it's just grinding your knee into each other and just destroying it, you know. And you'll make tears come to your eyes, and you'll yell, and you'll scream, and you'll holler from pain. And I got that thanks to my service for this country. And then the people sat back and refused to make a damn phone call. Mike, we got to stand up.
I hear you.
Okay, and thank you, Mike. That's all I'm going to say tonight. We do have an announcement coming later on about something we're going to be doing with Katrina, but it's not quite set up, but it's going to be interesting.
All right. Thanks, Sarge. Appreciate your call.
Thank you, Mike. Bye-bye.
Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry?
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
Many people have died. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer
21
is
past the hour.
In the wind.
Man, I would have thought by now we would have learned some really important lessons. I honestly don't know. Do you? Do you have any idea? What happened? I mean, We had all sorts of experiences over the past 40 years, you and I, about how to not lose our Constitution, the goals that we were all, I think, aspiring to: justice and equality under the law. I realize there's no such thing as human equality, but equality under the law, and justice, the foundation of everything, justice. And truth, and decency, and a foreign policy that showed the rest of the world that we were capable of leadership, if that's what we aspired to. And you know what happened? Sometimes I'll do it. Maybe you do it too. I'll sit back and listen to some of the songs from the 60s and the 70s, and read some of the writing from the 60s and 70s, even watch some of the movies when. Oh, God, I'm drawing a blank now. The actor from, what's his name? Peter Boyle, who died earlier this week, or was it last week? He made a movie way back in 70, 71. I think it was his first movie. And the title was Joe. And it's about a working class white guy who is just very pissed off at the hippies and the anti-war people. And if you haven't seen the movie Joe that Peter Boyle had a major role in, you need to see it. You really, really need to see it. It's called Joe. But I'm shocked sometimes. I think that everything that we thought we learned. We being that generation that's over 50 and has an obligation to turn around to the generation coming up and say, okay, this is what we learned. Now, this is what we learned, and we learned it very painfully. This is what we learned about justice in this country. This is what we learned about lynching. This is what we learned about civil rights. This is what we learned about human rights. And this is what we learned about not going to war ever, unless there is a valid reason. And about the only valid reason left is if we're attacked. And no one would do that. There's not a country on earth. There's not a country on earth that would attack us. Are there fanatics? Sure. And where do the fanatics come from? They come from parts of the world where the United States has absolutely, utterly, and completely oppressed and pushed them into a mold or a role that they didn't ask for. And I honestly believe that attacks on this country, no matter where they occur, attacks on Americans, are reactive. They're not proactive, they're reactive. Why do people hate America if we behave ourselves? If we don't exploit and try to absorb and use these acts of hegemony to take their culture, to take their natural resources. You know why? People constantly want to come here. But we didn't learn. Obviously, we did not. At least not to the extent that we have been able to teach our children well, to teach them what was necessary. And by our children, I'm talking about people in their 30s and their 40s. Not all. I'm not going to be that patronizing. There are an awful lot of people in their teens and 20s who are really dedicated to trying to save things, to save the Constitution, to save the planet. That's what it's getting down to. You know, the Constitution is going to just fry in a cinder like everything else if we don't get a grip on some of these other issues that are just absolutely critical. But my God, I mean, here we sit poised on a knife's edge of either saving ourselves and by extension the rest of the world because we're all connected, or letting it all go into the toilet, into the abyss, into the fire pit. I don't know. It gets very frustrating sometimes, and it comes out in this program, and I understand that. Very frustrating. And there I go. I use up another segment. Damn. Okay. Honest to God, your phone calls when we come back. All right?
You are on the road. Must have a code that you can live by. And so become yourself. Because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell. It's
free and secure Iraq in the midst of the Middle East will have enormous historical impact.
It's not even funny anymore, is it? Appeance, free and Iraq in the middle of the Middle East? Do the dance some more. Before the hour, back to the phone calls. Barbara is calling from Cave Creek, Arizona. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Calm down a little.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay. Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and hemp. the history of the hemp diesel, and Mr. Hemp was murdered after DuPont, Mellon, and Hearst got a hold of him and decided they didn't want to use...
Right.
You know, diesel, I mean, oil instead of hemp.
Right.
And if we had hemp, Mexico would flourish because it grows like crazy there. It grows like a weed everywhere. It cleans up the atmosphere. People could go to hempcar.org or hemptrade.ca.enpublic. Just look up hemp mm-hmm. on the internet, and you can see what it does. And it does everything from building materials to fuel that actually cleans the earth. It cleans the atmosphere because it captures carbon from the atmosphere. It's the perfect plant. It's food. It does everything. And the fact that is that if we actually, you know, became a hemp society instead of an oil society, we could survive. But the Saudi Arabians, who are running everything, don't like it. And they are, I think the reason why he hesitates in his speeches is because he's waiting for the translation from the Saudi Arabian language into English before he can speak from what they're telling him to say.
I hear you. I hear you. What else you got, Barbara?
Well, you know, McCain is scary. You know, savings and loan, he was in it with the Bush boys.
You know what scares me about McCain is he is essentially a coward. He was a coward when he was in the military.
He got shot down so he wouldn't have to fight. A lot of those guys got shot down in Vietnam because they weren't killed as prisoners of war. They were, you know, they were tortured, but they weren't necessarily killed. And
well, any politician who allows what happened to McCain in the South Carolina primary in 2000 to go unanswered is, by any definition, not mine, by any definition, an utter absolute coward. I have no more respect for John McCain than I do for a worm on the sidewalk.
Oh, he's the worst. I mean, he is an absolute worst. And, you know, we have to remember that Cheney went over to Saudi Arabia a couple of weeks ago in the middle. And who does Baker? Baker works for the Saudi Arabians. It's all the Saudis.
Yeah, it is.
The Saudi plan, and the Saudis will invade Iraq if we leave. And they're demanding, that's why the plan is from the Saudis, that we bring more American slave army in, or we're going to go in.
And never forget that 15 of the 19 bombers that hit this country were Saudis.
Saudi.
If we believe the official story. And
well, if they were collaborating, if they weren't, you know, on their own.
Sure, sure.
And by the way, on the song, the John Lennon song,
yeah,
the underscore to "And So This Is Christmas," the la 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 part in the end, and underneath it is "War is over if you want it."
If you want it,
so
yeah.
You really need to play John Lennon's version.
I know, I do. That is not in Justin Hayward's version. We just thought, what the hell? Since I'm such a moody blues freak, we would just play it tonight. But we'll do the John Lennon version, I think, at our Christmas party.
All right,
Barbara,
well,
thank you.
Happy.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right.
Thanks for checking in. Take care. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Dave is calling from Los Angeles. Hey, Dave.
Mike.
Thanks for holding on.
Jesus. Oh, man, my pleasure. I haven't called talk radio for many years, and I thought, since you're the cat who now sets the standard, I would call in. So I'm much obliged. Initially, what prompted my call is because this is December 19th and you're playing War is Over.
Yeah.
I just want to remind you, as a graybeard yippie myself,
yeah,
that Phil Oakes would turn 67 today, and he organized the War is Over rally in Central Park.
That's right.
You would recall that, of course.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's in the way back part of my brain, but yeah, I remember.
I know. It's not mentioned in polite society anymore.
No. No,
and let's see, vis-a-vis the Justin Hayward and so on, I still maintain Lost Chord is the definitive psychedelic album.
In Search of the Lost Chord is definitely, although...
I have taken acid many times,
but
several hits.
But don't forget, to our children's children's children...
Oh, I haven't forgotten. That works, too.
Isn't that the one with Timothy Leary's Dead?
No, well, that's Lost
is
Chord.
Is that Lost
Legend
Chord?
Legend of Mine, sure.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. With the sitar and so forth.
Oh,
know?
God, I love that music.
Me
oh,
too. Yeah.
God, I love it.
Yeah. And,
timeless.
I was digging the website, though. I guess initially it was the White Rose Society. And you've written a book on Lee Van Cleef, is that right?
No. There are other Mike Malloys, if you do a Google. The only book that I have written, I was one of several writers, and that was the Air America book. That's out there now. You can read the chapter I wrote if you want to really torture yourself.
I do, of course, want to torture myself.
Right.
And I should say that when the petition was going around to reinstate Mike Malloy, I fired off an angry populist email to Air America, and I said, reinstate Mike Malloy immediately or perish forever. Well, and I guess they chose to do neither.
Well, the thugs that took control of Air America and are in control of Air America now couldn't have cared less if there would have been 118,000 signatures on that petition. There were 18,000. Mm. Some real evil bastards took over Air America. Now, I realize that we still carry, on Nova M, we carry a lot of Air America programming.
I noticed that because I'm downloading you on the
right, but
computer.
The people there, Sam and Randy and the people, Rachel, the people who broadcast there are good people.
Oh, yeah, I know
it's,
that. Yeah.
It's just that Air America is run by people who are no more interested in liberal ideas or progressive ideas that I'm interested in Reverend Sun Myung-moon, and it's a real shame. Air America is essentially dead. It's just a matter of time before the corpse starts to rot and somebody kicks it to the curb.
Well, you know, Al Franken, years ago, I don't know if this was before or after, maybe it was shortly after Air America began, he actually said, I am a DLC Democrat, and he proves it all the time. He's pathologically cautious and corporate.
Oh, he is. He is. I don't care for Al Franken as a radio talk show host or as a political voice. I just don't. But so what? He doesn't care for me either.
Sure.
So it's extremely mutual. But Air America is... it's a shame what happened. The people who started Air America started on a very righteous note. And on a righteous business note, they really did. It was a good idea, but it was taken over by thugs and right-wing operatives who said, oh, I get to play president of a radio network while I'm ripping off the investors and stuffing my money, stuffing my pockets with money. It's a sorry story.
It's an old story, and it happens time and time again.
It does. It does. It usually happens in religious circles, but in this case, it happened in broadcast circles.
Yeah.
All right, Dave, let me move on. Thanks a lot.
Oh,
hope to hear from you again.
I will, and it's really nice talking with you, Mike.
My pleasure,
I dig
sir.
You the most, Daddy.
Well, take care. Take
okay,
care.
Okay, thanks,
all
pal.
Right. All
Bye.
Right. That kind of language, that reminds me of Wolfman Jack. I dig you the most, Daddy-O. That's another one of my top five movies was American Graffiti.
What?
Never mind, Kathy. Poor Kathy. Oh, my God. Oh, Kathy. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Mike. You know, it sucks.
Yeah, it does.
And, you know, considering that I'm not even old enough to drink or smoke, it really sucks. And, you know, I keep telling myself, you know, don't be pessimistic. Don't say you're screwed. But, I mean, let's look at it from a realistic point of view. Anybody under the age of 21 is screwed completely, utterly. And I would like to add that most of them don't care. Most of them are conservative, fascist, moron SOBs who care less. They think, oh, George Bush is doing a great job. We want him for 2008 and 2012 until he dies. But then and he's Jesus, so he won't die.
Yeah.
But you know,
there's still time, Matthew. Another one of my favorite movies is On the Beach, and the very last scene in On the Beach is a banner stretched across a park in either Sydney or Melbourne, Australia, and the banner says, "There is still time, brother." And I think that applies to people your age. Hold on, Matthew, because I got to do a break here, and we'll come back and finish the conversation after the break. This is Nova M. I'm Mike Malloy.
You're still out here. He has been told to say it clear, to say it cool. It's over. It ain't going any further. And now the wheels of heaven stop. Get ready for the future. It is murder. Dangle the power slide in all directions. Won't be nothing you can measure anymore. The blizzard.
10 before the hour. Thanks to our engineer, associate producer in Phoenix, Ian Huff, who engineered the program and answered your calls tonight. Thanks to Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, the moderators at MikeMalloy.com and Ben Birch of WhiteRoseSociety.org. Podcasts are available of this program are available, I should say. Thanks to Catherine Bay, our executive producer. We're just about out of time. Let's go back to Matthew Bedford, Texas. What I was going to say, Matthew, is that as negative as this program sounds sometimes, it's from the perspective of someone my age. Now, when I hate to start a sentence this way, but I'm going to anyway. When I was your age, I had that enthusiasm and that positive outlook, and you've got to maintain that. That's the only thing, Matthew, listen to me closely. That's the only thing that's going to turn this ship of state around is the attitude, positive attitude, of people your age. So don't look out here and see nothing but a world of crap. It looks like that, but it always looks like that to young people until they change it. So I hate to put this on you, pal, but it's up to people in your generation. It really is. So I hope you're going to rescue us oldies by doing what you know you have to do.
Yeah. Well, that would bring me to my next point. When I'm old enough and when these people are hopefully long, long expired, dead, the ground. Look, regarding a couple of days ago, you had this guy named Roy who called you. I don't know if you remember him, about how believing in heaven or hell would bring you some kind of comfort or something.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to kind of disagree with that on one perspective, and, I mean, being an atheist myself, I can probably have Reverend What's-His-Face call me up and say, "You little heathen, you're going straight to hell."
Right,
but,
right.
Listen, I don't want these bastards to go to any form of heaven or hell. I don't want them on any form of existence. I don't want them on any plane. I don't want them... well, of course, there's the possibility that they can just atone for all their sins if they go to heaven, which I think is total malarkey, and isn't fair, for any so-called just and loving God. But I don't want them in hell either, namely because, their pain is too good for these monsters. I want them gone. I want them out of existence. I don't want them experiencing anything. I want them in the sea of nothingness, and the only remnant I want of them on this planet is a couple of stained bones 6 feet under the ground where
Matthew,
I can piss on them.
Matthew, Jesus, you're freaking me out. Oh, my God. You're not old enough to drink, huh?
No, 17. Almost old enough to vote, and I'm old enough to go kill some poor Iraqis, though.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right. Well, Matthew, you certainly have a way with words. What you need to do is write this stuff down and get it out there. I swear to God, America is waiting for a political bestseller from a 17 or an 18-year-old. So you certainly get my vote as the kid who could write it. So, listen, Matthew, I got to go. Thanks a lot. Call again, all right?
Will do.
All right. Take care, Matthew. Take care. Take care. Whew. Wow. Oh, my God. I don't want him dead. I don't want him in heaven. I don't want him in hell. I want him in a sea of nothingness. That's so Sartre. That's so Nietzsche. That's so Simone de Beauvoir. That is so out there. You gotta love that kid. Well, Matthew, you have a great future in front of you. I don't know. Matthew is either going to wind up being a philosopher. You mark my words. He's either going to wind up being a philosopher or a bomb thrower. One of the two. I hope he picks philosophy. Michael is calling from, or I'm sorry, where are we? We're lost. Bob in Arizona. Hey, Bob.
Hey, how you doing, Mike? listen, I just started listening to you on Monday, and you are the man. You know, I don't want you to, you know, blow an aneurysm or something, but I love it when you get all pumped up.
Well, I take, you know, my doctor keeps me on lisinopril, which is a real good high blood pressure medicine, and I do a lot of working out. So between the two, I'm all right.
Well, what I wanted to say was, you know, I'm a Vietnam vet, and I just, you know, I like you, thought these Democrats, I voted Democrat because I thought, great, you know, these people are standing up and they're saying something. Now they're turning out to be just as wimpy as everybody else. The last rant you were on about, mm-hmm. you know, about everybody, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I thought, you know, I feel revolution in the air, and I, you know, and like Thomas Jefferson, I think revolution is good for democracy. I see it coming down the road, and I'm just curious about your take, I'll hang up and let you talk. But another good movie is Johnny Got His Gun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, my God,
you
can, yeah.
You know, I think that
Dalton Trumbull. Dalton Trumbull movie. It's a great movie.
Fantastic. You know, I saw it after I returned from Vietnam. And you know, I about had to put myself in rehab over it. You know, I thought, man, people don't realize what happens to somebody during wartime. And as far as Matthew, hey. Get out there in front, boy. Okay, I'll hang up and let you talk, Mike.
All right, Bob, check in again. Stay in touch. Call us again, okay?
I sure will, bud.
All right, sir. Take care. The only thing I can add to what he said was, you know, it was Jefferson who said the Tree of Liberty, I'm paraphrasing, the Tree of Liberty has to be fertilized every once in a while with the blood of tyrants and patriots. So I, you know, I've said it before on this program. I would hate to see that happen again, but I don't know. I don't know. We're just seeking answers, just truth seekers. Thanks for participating in the program tonight. However you did that, I appreciate it. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.